With this afternoon's session. So we're looking at Samson and what an enigma Samson is, okay? And what normally happens during this is that everyone in the room will have a different opinion on Samson, okay? And I've given probably about 4 or 5 talks at different stages, whether Sunday school, CYC, Bible class, on Samson. And I think every time I've given that talk, my opinion has changed on him. But it is going in the same direction, and my opinion has constantly changed in one direction. So what we're going to look at today is my interpretation, okay? And I understand that lots of other people will have their interpretations, and I'm more than happy to discuss that with you afterwards if you want to. So there is no one in particular interpretation of this. In fact, maybe that is why Samson it is an enigma, because we can take out from it what we want, and therefore there are lots and multiple lessons. So I think the question is there anything good that can come from the tribe of Dan? Now, we've been really down on the tribe of Dan over the last couple of days, haven't we? And he's taken a bit of a hammering. And for good reason, in one sense. Dan had the symbol of the serpent that was given to them. And we know what the serpent is all about, don't we? The serpent was the thing that deceived right from the very beginning. And then we looked at in that chapter 17 how that Dan were the tribe that weren't faithful enough to get their own territory, even though they were one of the biggest tribes. And they decided to take the easy route, and they decided to do it their own way. And they decided to set up their own system of worship their own way. In the procession from for the tabernacle, when they were moving the tabernacle, poor old Dan came at the end. When we read through the book of Judges as a whole, we've got the first judge who came from Judah. The last judge, Samson, comes from Dan. So again, Dan is right at the end again, isn't he? Dan didn't turn up to the battle. So when Deborah said, you know, I want your help, and Barak said, please come and help, Dan didn't turn up. When Gideon said, come and help, join and fight, Dan didn't turn up. So the tribe of Dan almost became a bit like the region of Galilee in the days of Jesus, when they said, can anything good come out of Galilee? Well, we know that something very good came out of Galilee. And I think the scripture here is written to tell us that something good can come out of Dan. And we know that. I mean, I've got the picture up there, haven't I, of Samson being this great, strong person. And I said yesterday that I don't think that's the case, because it goes against the whole ethos, doesn't it, of the book of Judges. And the ethos of the book of Judges is, out of weakness, well made strong. And so I think Samson was a normal person. He was an everyday person, but God used him in order to fulfill his purpose. And therefore, when the Spirit of God came on Samson, that's when he became strong, not because he was a strong person himself. So let's just turn to Genesis chapter 49. And we'll just have a look here to see what comments. I think this is Jacob's final comments, isn't it, on his sons. Genesis 49, verse 16, and this is his comment about Dan. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. And it's a strange statement, isn't it? Why would he put in Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel? It's almost as if he's saying that Dan wasn't really one of the tribes of Israel. In fact, they were so bad. But even from Dan, God would raise up a judge from this tribe. Verse 17, Dan shall be a serpent by the way, an adder in the path that biteth the horse heels so that his rider shall fall backwards. What's all that about? Well, just keep those thoughts in your mind. So Dan is like something that lurks by the side of the path and bites the horse's heels. It's almost as if surprise attacks on the enemies. Okay, so just keep that thought in mind. Let's just have a bit of interaction first, though. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 11, because I want to see what the Bible says about Samson before we go any further. Hebrews chapter 11, and as we know, this is a chapter about men and women who have great faith and who have been recorded in the scriptures for us to tell us that, even though maybe they didn't realise it at the time. And what I want you to do is, if you can just read just now to yourselves, just read verses 32 to 38. And I want you, as you're going through that, just to pick out the things that you think relate to Samson. Okay, from what your knowledge is of Samson, just have a think about, out of that list, what things do they relate to Samson? Okay, right. Anyone brave enough to shout anything out? From what you know about Samson, what of those statements do we think relates to Samson?
Stop the mouths of lions.
Absolutely, yeah. That's what he's really well known for, isn't he? His attack on the lion. What else?
Tortured,
yes. So he was subjected, wasn't he, to torture when they finally caught him. Chained in prison, yeah.
Waxed valiant in fight,
yeah. Any others?
Turn to flight,
the Philistines, yes.
One strength out of weakness.
Strength out of weakness, yeah, which comes out really in the episode when he kills the lion and the carcass that's left, yeah. Any others? Sorry? Where's that coming from? Oh, tempted. Okay.
Through faith.
Okay, let's put you out of your misery. And again, this is only my list, so we're not saying that this is... But I went through that list and I thought, wow, out of all the judges that we have looked at so far, I don't think any of the judges meet all of these criteria that Samson does. Subdued kingdoms, okay, he fought against the Philistines single-handedly, okay, wrought righteousness, he stopped the mouths of lions, he escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness he's made strong, he waxed valiant in fight, he turned to flight the armies of the aliens, tortured, trials of mocking and scourging. You remember when they took him into the temple of Dagon and it said that they had made sport of him. Bonds and imprisonment, were tempted, wandered in mountains and in caves. And there's an incident we'll look at where it tells us how Samuel goes up, doesn't he, into the mountains to Etam, and he sort of hides away there for a bit. So all of those characteristics in Hebrews chapter 11 all relate to Samson. So this is truly a man of faith. Now, the one that was were tempted, which I think we get in the AV, has anyone got a modern version? Does it say we're tempted in the modern version? Verse 37. In some of the modern versions, that's not in there, we're tempted. And yet... I'm sure that was the case. But out of all of those, the things that people most remember about Samson is his temptations and the fact that he gave in to them. So out of all those other things that he did, the thing I think that Samson is most remembered for is the potential bad things that he did. Okay, which doesn't seem right, does it? it just doesn't sit well with me that that's why Samson is remembered. And that's what we'll go and have a look at. Okay, so where does Samson fit into the whole of the Judges? Let's go back. Let's just go to Psalm 78 on the way back to Judges, because there's something I just want to pick up here. Psalm 78 and verse 60 to 66. So Psalm 78 sort of catalogues for us, doesn't it, a history of the Israel nation, and it takes us through the wilderness journey. And then it brings us to, in verse 60, it brings us to the tabernacle of Shiloh. Okay, so we know exactly what time period this is relating to, and it's talking about the destruction of the tabernacle at Shiloh. And that's also, if we went to Jeremiah 7, it talks about the destruction of the temple of Shiloh as well. And the chances are that this happened more or less after the death of Eli and the priests. And if you remember, when they sent the Ark of the Covenant into battle against the Philistines, it tells us that the Philistines took the Ark of the Covenant, the strength of God, and then Hophni and Phinehas were killed, and then Eli got the report and he fell off his stool and he was killed as well. And we're not specifically told when the destruction of Shiloh happened, but we know that the destruction of Shiloh was necessary, because that had to be taken away in order that a new order could come in and the temple then could be established in Jerusalem. But let's have a read what it says. So he forsook the tabernacle of Shiloh, the tent which he placed among men, and delivered his strength into captivity, and his glory into the enemy's hand. He gave his people over also into the sword, and was wroth with his inheritance. The fire consumed their young men, and their maidens were not given to marriage. Their priests fell by the sword, and their widows made no lamentation. But then the Lord awaked as one out of sleep, and like a mighty man that shouted by reason of wine, and he smote his enemies in the hinder parts. He put them to a perpetual reproach. And there's a few words in there that remind me of Samson, you know, this mighty man who was woken. And then it talks about he shouted by reason of wine. And wine is something that we associate, isn't it, with Samson. But it's 66 that interests me. It's he smote his enemies in the hinder parts. It's almost like a little militia, really, that strikes at the enemy at different points and fights against them. And we know exactly that's what Samson was doing. Because in the days of Samson, there was no oppressing army. There was not an army that turned up in order to fight Israel. Why was that the case? It was the case because the army was already in Israel. The Philistines were already in Israel. And we read that when Judah went up to see Samson at the Rock of Etam, they say, "Samson, what are you doing? Do you not realize that the Philistines are our overlords?" You see, the people had completely accepted the situation that they were now in subjection to the Philistines. There was no cry. We said, didn't we, that Jephthah was the last recorded time that the people cried out to the Lord. In the days of Samson, there was no cry because everyone had accepted the situation for what it was. We can do nothing. The Philistines rule over us. And therefore, God raised up Samson to be this lone fighter, this person that was going to go from place to place like a snake by the side of the path, nipping at the heels of the horses and bringing them down, just like almost a bit of a vigilante striking at the Philistines. So why? Okay, let's have a look. So are we back in, let's go back into Judges, and let's go into Judges 13. Let's just have a little bit of an introduction to Samson. Where did he come from? Judges 13, we are told that the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. Verse 2, there was a certain man of Zorah of the family of the Danites whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and bare not. And we've got similarities here, haven't we, all the way through the Judges. These barren women, but also these faithful couples that despite everything else that's happening around them, there were pockets of faithful couples. Now, how do we know that they were faithful? Well, my suggestion is that when all the other Danites left and thought, we've had enough of this, we're going to go and find an easier place to live, and they all moved up north, who do you think were the people that were left behind? I think the people that were left behind were the faithful people. They were the people that had accepted God's inheritance in faith and thought, no, this is where God wants me to be, and therefore I'm staying in my inheritance. I'm not going off with everybody else. So Samson comes then from this family who stayed put in faith in their inheritance. And what's more, the angel of the Lord visits them. Now, when the ark was taken by the Philistines, if you remember, the ark went to three of the cities of the Philistines. There's five cities of the Philistines: Gath, Gaza, Ashdod, Ashkelon, and Ekron. Five cities of the Philistines. Now, the three that the ark went to, Ashkelon, Gath, and Ekron, what happened? They were destroyed by a plague, weren't they? The Lord God used the Ark of the Covenant to bring a plague on those places. So judgment was already served on three of the five cities of the Philistines. Who was going to serve judgment on the last two? Well, I suggest that it was Samson, and we'll have a look at that. Let's just have a look where Samson roamed. In verse 25 there of Judges chapter 13, it tells us, and the Spirit of the Lord began to move him at times in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol. Camp of Dan, where have we heard of that before? Just turn over. Judges chapter 18. And we're back here, aren't we, where we started on Saturday morning. We're in this incident with the Danites. Verse 12 of Judges 18, and they went up and they pitched in Kirjath-Jearim in Judah, wherefore they called that place Mahane-Dan, which means the camp of Dan. Unto this day, behold, it is behind Kirjath-Jearim. Now that's interesting. Why is it important that between Zorah, Eshtaol here, and the camp of Dan must have been somewhere around here? We're not too sure where it is, but it tells us that it's placed near Kirjath-Jearim, or Kirjath-Jearim, as it says there. And it tells us that Samson was moved between this area. So this in this area around here. So what was at Kirjath-Jearim? Well, let's have a look in Samuel. Let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 1. Sorry, 1 Samuel chapter 7. You remember the ark was taken by the Philistines. It was returned because it was causing so much chaos. And they put it on that wagon, didn't they? And the cows brought it back to Israel, and it wandered over to Beth Shemesh. And somebody made the mistake of looking into the ark, and it killed people. So the Israelites said, oh dear, now what do we do with the Ark of God? It's dangerous. So what they did in verse 1 of chapter 7, and the men of Kirjath-Jearim came and fetched up the Ark of the Lord and brought it into the house of Abinadab in the hill and sanctified Eleazar the son to keep the Ark of the Lord. And it came to pass while the Ark abode in Kirjath-Jearim that the time was long, for it was 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. So the ark was here for 20 years. How long did Samson judge Israel for? 20 years. And it's highly likely, we've already touched on it already, we've touched on the fact that Samuel, Samson, Jephthah, Jephthah's daughter, were all roughly around the same time period, and Eli. So it's likely that the ark was taken here, and what Samson's role was, or one of his roles, was not only to frustrate the Philistine army, but also to protect the ark of God, because he was in that area, and God had brought the ark there for his protection. So while Samson was annoying the enemy and distracting the enemy, what was Samuel doing? Samuel was behind the scenes trying to establish the preaching in the land and to set up the school of the prophets and to get things set up spiritually for the transition to the period of the kings. And there's lots of links between Samson and Samuel. I don't know whether you've realised how many links there are, but it's when we look at it, it's quite amazing between these two men. They were both born of barren women. And again, from barren women come really, really special people. They were judges of Israel, which we know. Now, they were subject to a vow imposed on them. And let's just consider this Nazarite vow for a few moments, because there is a danger that we can judge Samson by this Nazarite vow. And what we do is we assume that the vow that was put on Samson was the Nazarite vow that we read about in Numbers chapter 6. Let's just have a look at Numbers chapter 6 and let's find out if that is the case. Numbers chapter 6. There were three parts of the Nazarite vow. But just read what it says in verse 2. Speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them, when either a man or woman shall separate themselves to vow a vow of a Nazarite, to separate themselves unto the Lord, he shall separate himself from wine and strong drink. So that's number one. Number five, verse 5, all the days of the vow of his separation, there shall no razor come upon his head. That's the second aspect. And verse 6, all the days that he separated himself unto the Lord, he shall come at no dead body. So there's three aspects there of the Nazarite vow. And what we can say is, well, Samson was subject to a Nazarite vow, and therefore he broke all three of them. Because he came into contact with grapes in the vineyard. He came into contact with dead bodies because, well, he caused most of them. And he came into and he shaved his head. And therefore he broke all the parts of the Nazarite vow. Well, let's rethink this, shall we? Because this is talking about an individual who wants to put a vow upon themselves. So this is somebody who wants to raise themselves spiritually towards God, and they have chosen to take upon the Nazarite vow themselves, and therefore they choose these three things to do. Now in the case of Samuel, let's go and have a look at Samuel. I keep saying Samuel, I mean Samson. If I say Samuel, I mean Samson. If I say Samson, I don't mean Samuel, if that makes sense. Okay, let's go to Judges chapter 13. And let's just have a look at this. Because this was not a vow that Samson took upon himself. It was a vow that was imposed on him before he was even born. And it was a vow that was imposed on him by God, not by anybody else. So verse 4, talking to the wife, Manoah's wife. We don't know her name, do we? No. Verse 4. Now therefore, beware, I pray thee, and drink not wine nor strong drink, and eat not any unclean thing. So, the drink and the unclean thing is binding upon the mother. It's not binding upon Samson. For lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite unto God.
from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. And the word that we get hung up on there is the word Nazarite. Now, in the Hebrew, that would not read as Nazarite. That would read as a separate one. So he would be somebody separated God. For the child shall be somebody separated unto God from the womb. So that does not imply that Samson was subject to the three parts of the Nazarite vow. He was only subject to one. And what's really interesting in the story of Samson is as soon as he breaks that one vow to cut his hair, that's when everything went wrong. Not when he went near the vineyards, not when he touched dead bodies. It all went wrong when his hair was cut, because that was the only part of the vow binding upon him. Just by way of, how long have we got? Let's just go to Samuel quickly, something we looked at this morning, but we didn't actually look at the vow. What's really interesting about this, and I wonder whether Hannah had heard the story of what had happened with Samson. And Hannah was thinking, well, Samson's mother was barren like me. And she raised, and Samson was going to be somebody that was separated to God, and therefore his hair wasn't to be cut. Now look at what Hannah says in her vow. Samuel chapter 1 verse 1, and she vowed a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid and remember me and not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head. So Hannah then, possibly picking up on what had happened with Manoah and his wife, was thinking, maybe God will grant me a child, but I'm going to have to dedicate him to the Lord. And I will also follow the same precedent in that I will say that no razor will come on his head either. And maybe God will listen to me. And it's interesting, when Eli comes to Hannah and says, oh, look, it looks like you're drunken. What are you doing? Hannah says, verse 15, and Hannah answered and said, no, my Lord, I am a woman of a sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink. So again, Hannah had kept herself from wine and strong drink, which was the vow imposed upon Manoah's wife. Just a suggestion to think about. Where did we get to? Right. Okay, subject to a vow imposed upon them. They both grew in the presence of the Lord. And again, this is quite unique to the judges. In Judges chapter 13, verse 24, and the woman bare a son and called his name Samson, and the child grew, and the Lord blessed him. Of no other of the judges does it say that the Lord blessed him, except for Samson, and it implies it of Samuel as well. And we looked at that this morning, how it told us how Samuel grew, didn't he, in the knowledge of God and in the words of God, and he became an intercessor between man and God. Oh, I put those quotes in there for you. Again, the only judges where we get a complete birth to death record. None of the other judges do we learn about their birth and about their death, but we do with Samson and Samuel. They both pray to God. Now, Samson's prayer is, if you remember, when he's slain the armies of the Philistine with the jaw of the ass, he speaks to God and says, you know, please give me some water, lest I die and I'm taken by the uncircumcised. So although it's not classed as a prayer, he speaks to God in order for that. They bring physical and spiritual cleansing to the nation. Samson brings the physical in that he is clearing the nation of the enemies. And Samuel is bringing the spiritual cleansing in that he is clearing the nation of idolatry. And right at the very beginning of the judges' period, the two accusations levelled at Israel is the enemies and the idolatry. And therefore, Samuel and Samson working together here to spiritually and physically clear the nation of Israel in preparation for the time of the king coming. And finally they're there to prepare the way for the king, the priesthood, and for the temple. So let's turn into chapter 14, because again, this is another sticking point, isn't it, in the life of Samson. Because it seems as though Samson takes a liking to a Philistine girl. It says that she pleases him, he pleased her, and then he ends up taking her. And it takes us right back, doesn't it, to the Garden of Eden, where Adam and Eve saw the fruit, it pleased them, and they ended up taking it. And we can see there the progression of temptation. But is that what it really says? What's interesting in chapter 14 is a couple of things. First of all, the parents do not know what Samson is up to. Now, that's normal, isn't it, for most parents? We don't know what our children are up to. But in this case, Samson keeps from his parents what he is actually doing. Now, is that unique in Scripture? There's a story, isn't there, in the New Testament of a little boy aged 12 years old who gets lost and his parents find him in the temple. And the parents say to him, "What are you doing here?" And Jesus says, "I'm about my Father's business. You don't need to know. I'm about my Father's business." And therefore, Samson here, I think, is about his Father's business, but he's very careful to keep it away from his parents. And there may be good reasons for that. It may be that he may feel that that might drop them into trouble with the authorities or with the Philistines, or the Philistines could use them as a lever against him. I don't know, but it keeps on telling us that his father and mother did not know what was happening. But at the end of verse 3 there, Samson sees this woman, and Samson said unto his father, "Get her for me, for she pleaseth me well." Now, where it says pleaseth me, the Hebrew says, "It is right in my eyes." So whatever purpose Samson wants this Philistine girl for, it is right in his eyes. There is no mention here of Samson loving this girl, lusting after this girl. Whereas when we get to Delilah, it's a different matter altogether. It says that Samson loved Delilah. And that, of course, was part of his downfall. But here, there is an intention behind what Samson is doing. And it reinforces it in verse 4. "But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord that he sought an occasion against the Philistines. For at that time, the Philistines had dominion over Israel." So however we see this, was it that the occasion was of Samson, that he sought an occasion against the Philistines, Samson, or is that he there, the Lord? So the father and mother knew not that it was of the Lord, that the Lord sought an occasion against the Philistines. But either way, this whole episode with this woman from Timnath was about Samson seeking an occasion against the Lord. The other interesting thing about this is that there is never ever a marriage recorded in these few chapters. So the intention is there that Samson's going to marry this girl, but it never happens. Because what actually happens is a sequence of events happen that then enable Samson to get frustrated and angry, and the Spirit of God moves him, and then he goes and does God's bidding. Let's have a look. He sets a riddle, doesn't he? It's verse 10. "So his father went down unto the woman, and Samson made there a feast, for so used the young men to do. And it came to pass that they saw him, that they brought 30 companions to be with him. And Samson said unto them, I will now put forth a riddle unto you." So he's playing with the Philistines, isn't he? He is seeking an occasion against them. And unfortunately, they use this woman. They use this woman in order to find out what the riddle means. And as a result of that, Samson gets cross and he goes off to Ashkelon, doesn't he, and kills these people. And then that triggers another event. And then he then burns down their fields. And then that triggers another event. And he ends up at the Rock of Etam near Lehi, which we'll have a look at in a minute. But let's come back. Let's come back to verse 5 of chapter 14. Then Samson went down with his father and his mother to Timnath and came to the vineyards of Timnath. And behold, a young lion roared against him. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him. Now, five times it tells us that the Spirit of the Lord came upon Samson. And it doesn't tell us that for any of the other judges. I think it tells us for Othniel and Gideon, it comes on him on them once. But five times it tells them that it comes upon Samson. So this is truly a man that is being pushed forward by God. And it comes upon him, and we know what happens. He slays this lion with his bare hands. And we here have an enacted parable, don't we? We hear, and this didn't just happen by chance. It wasn't that there's just a lion by the side of the road and Samson agrees to go and fight it. The Lord made him do it. Why did he make Samson fight the lion? Because this was a trial for what Samson was about to do. Because in Samson destroying the lion, in effect, what he was doing is he was destroying the oppressing power of the day, which was the Philistines. And so the lion represented that opposing force of the Philistines. And Samson was able to go there barehanded and destroy that symbol of the Philistines, which he was then going on to do for real. What is left? He then later on, verse 8, and after a time he returned to take her, the lady. Now, if you're going to visit your girlfriend or the person that you're wanting to marry, okay, you're probably quite eager to get there. Why would you go and look at a rotting old carcass of a lion? That's a bit of a slur, isn't it, on your girlfriend, if you'd sooner see a rotting carcass rather than your girlfriend. So, he does it for a reason. Because Samson wants to know what was the outcome of his actions. And God shows him. Verse 8, and after a time, he took her, and he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion. And behold, there was a swarm of bees and honey in the carcass of the lion. And he took thereof in his hands and went on eating. So what does the carcass represent here? Well, the word means there to ruin or to fall. So the actions of Samson were to bring about the ruin or the fall of the Philistine nation. And we know that that happened when he pushed the pillars of the temple down. Okay, he destroyed the Philistines that were in there. Then we've got this odd incident of this swarm of bees. What's the swarm? Well, the swarm means a congregation. It means something that is going to come out of this carcass. Okay, so out of the carcass there's going to be life. There is going to be a congregation. And the idea of this swarm is something which is orderly. And that's what bees are, aren't they? I don't know much about bees. But what I do know is that they are intelligent. And they are orderly. They know, they plan their routes out, don't they? And when they find a food source, they come back to the hive and they do, I think it's a waggle dance, is that right? They do a waggle dance in order to show the other bees in the colony where the food source is. They are organised. Bee means Deborah. Okay, and the word there is associated with the buzzing noise. Okay, which is the talking noise of the bees. So they talked and they were orderly in their fashion. And what a wonderful idea that out of the ruin of the Philistines, we're now going to rise up a new congregation in Israel that was going to be orderly and it was going to be talking the words of God together. And then we've got the honey, haven't we? You see, out of bad things come sweetness. And we know what honey symbolises, a land full of milk and honey. As Jonathan took the honey, it tells us that his eyes were lit up. It's refreshing, it's sweetness, out of something that is bad, which is what the period of the judges was, something that was a ruin and a carcass, is now going to come something which is sweet and lovely and organised. Okay, so we said that the riddle started a chain of events and it started a chain of escalation. So, where's my map? lost my map. There we are. So Samson goes all the way from where he was in Timnath. He understands that they find out his riddle. So he travels all the way over to Ashkelon. Is that right? Have I got? Yeah. He travels all the way over to Ashkelon to go and fight the Philistines. Why does he travel all this distance here to slay just 30 Philistines? Why couldn't he have gone to Gath? Yeah? Why couldn't he have gone? I mean, Ekron's, look, just that short distance. Why does he travel all the way down here to Ashkelon to go and kill 30 Philistines? Well, you might have thought, well, he didn't want to get a reputation in the area of killing the Philistines, so he went further afield. But, as I suggested earlier, this was one of the cities that had not yet been judged by God. Okay, so there was unfinished duties here. This then precipitated, if you remember, the wife being then given away to somebody else. So Samson then said, right, I'm going to burn all your fields. Take away all your food. Okay, so he takes away their food. Then that precipitates the fact that the father and the daughter then get burned and killed by the Philistines. So then what does Samson do? He then goes up in later on in chapter 15. And let's read what happens here. Verse 7 of chapter 15. And Samson said unto them, though ye have done this, yet will I be avenged of you, and after that I will cease. Interesting. It seems to me that Samson gets to the point where that's it, he's had enough. He does all these things by God, he destroys, he avenges this girl, and then it seems that he's going to do this last act, but then that's it. It's going to be over. And verse 9 tells us, the Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi. And the men of Judah said, why are you come up against us? And they answered, to bind Samson. We are come up to do to him as he hath done to us. And note this, verse 11, there were 3,000 of Judah there. And it tells us that Samson only killed 1,000 Philistines. So there was a ratio of 3 to 1, Israel versus Philistines, and yet the men from Judah still felt as though that they were in subjection to the Philistines. And we know what happens. The men of Judah go up to Samson and they say, the Philistines want you. Will you come down with us? And verse 12, and they said unto him, we are come down to bind thee, and we may deliver thee into the hand of the Philistines. And Samson said unto them, swear unto me that ye will not fall upon me yourselves. So Samson here resigns himself to the fact that he is going to be handed over to the enemy. But he doesn't want to be betrayed by his brothers. And in the life of the Lord Jesus Christ, we know, don't we, how Jesus subjected himself to his brethren in order to be handed over to the Romans in order to be killed. And there is a lovely type, but God has one last act with Samson, doesn't he? In verse 14, and when he came unto Lehi, the Philistines shouted against him. That word shouted there is roared. The lion, you see, the lion roars. The Philistines were the lion against him. And the Spirit of God came mightily upon him, and the cords that were on his arm became as flax, and he burst out of them, and he ended up killing 1,000 Philistines. And then right in verse 20 there, it says, he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. And it seems that this is the end now. This is the end of the judgment of Samson upon the Philistines. But then we've got chapter 18, haven't we? Which is difficult. We've got the first three verses there of chapter 16, which there's not a time scale associated with these. It doesn't tell us when it happens. So this could have happened at any time. But it tells us now how Samson goes down to Gaza, and he spends this night with this prostitute in Gaza. And what he does then is he gets up in the middle of the night, he takes the gates of the city and he carries them towards Hebron. And of course the accusation here against Samson is, well, what's Samson doing with a prostitute? That's bad, isn't it? That's sinful. Why would Samson need to go to a prostitute? Well, that is the question, isn't it? Why does, again, if Samson wanted to be with a prostitute, why would he have to travel all these hundreds of miles down here to go to Gaza? Why couldn't he have found a lady that was closer to him in some of these cities here? Even whether they were Jews or whether they were Philistines, there were lots of people closer by than having to go all the way down to Gaza. Well, if I was travelling into the heart of the enemy territory, and Gaza means stronghold, I would not want people to know that I was there. Especially if in the middle of the night I was going to sneak out, take the gates off the post and carry them away. I would want to keep as low a profile as possible. So where would you go for total anonymity? You'd go to the house of a prostitute because no questions are asked. And it's no different from when the spies went into Jericho and they ended up in Rahab's house. In fact, it's exactly the same word. Where it says that Samson lay till night, the word there means he lodged, which is the same word that is used of the spies that went into Rahab. Now, there's no accusations, are there, against the spies that went into Jericho? And what's more, if he went in to see a prostitute, why didn't he stay there the night and get up in the morning? It specifically tells us that he got up in the middle of the night in order to carry out this job. So he arose at midnight with a purpose, with an intention, in order to do this act in Gaza. And what Samson was doing in this is that he was going into the stronghold of Gaza and saying, you think you've got a stronghold here? Well, this is absolutely nothing to what God can do. And he lifts the gates off the posts or however they were attached, put them on his back or however he decided to carry them. And he carries them. It says to Hebron, but it says, the text actually says towards Hebron. So we don't know whether it actually was all the way to Hebron. But the symbology of Hebron, of course, is where the patriarchs were. Specifically, Abraham. And there's a lovely promise, isn't there, about Hebron. In Genesis 22, verse 17. Let's just have a quick look at that. We can't really go past it without running out of time. Apologies, everyone. We haven't even gotten to Delilah yet. Let's just have a look at this promise, 22. Verse 17. Genesis 22, verse 17. Promise then, in that blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thee, the seed as the stars of the heaven, as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. So this is a direct fulfillment, isn't it, of that promise that was given to Abraham. Okay, so we are out of time. But I just want to say something about Delilah. Because this was Samson's real downfall, wasn't it? And his downfall was that he loved Delilah more than he loved God. Just turn back to Judges chapter 19 for a minute. Because there's something that wonderful comes out of this. Judges 16. In Deuteronomy, Moses says, love the Lord with all your heart, soul, and strength. That is the measure by which we love God. Our heart, our soul, and our strength. What does Delilah want from Samson? She wants his strength. She's not bothered about his heart and his soul. She wants his strength. and she goes about trying to get strength off Samuel. And the word appears there, strength, in verse 5, in verse 6, and in verse 9, and in verse 15. But what was Samson willing to give her? Verse 15, and she said unto him, how canst thou say I love thee when thine heart is not with me? So, in order to get his strength, she asks for his heart as well. And Samson is willing to give her his heart. Verse 16, and it came to pass when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him so that his soul was vexed unto death. So in order to get his strength, she is asking now for his heart and she is asking for his soul. And Samson is willing to give her all of those things because it tells us in verse 4 that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek. And so Samson's downfall then was that he loved Delilah more than he loved God, and he was willing to give his strength, soul, and heart to Delilah. And we know the rest of the story, don't we? But the final outcome is when Samson bows his head and he stretches out his arms and he pushes those pillars down. And in that act of stretching out his arms, he destroys the enemy for good. And so it was with the Lord Jesus Christ, that as he bowed his head and as he stretched out his arms on that cross, the final act of destruction was done to the enemy.
Well, thanks, Roger.